she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Death, a Funny Business with myself, Becky Briggs, and
Stuart Sandovan.
He's back.
I'm back again.
Tasha has not died. She's just still busy on the stage in London, so she's doing her thing. So thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
For joining me, Stuart, again.
Great to be back.
It's been quite the week.
It has been quite the week.
It's been quite the week. I kind of want to, first of all, let's intro the show. So, this is obviously a show about death. We're going to be speaking to Katie Rose Whiting, who is a death and miscarriage doula, later on. And we might play a game. But first of all, let's talk about...
A death game. Okay.
Do you know what that involves?
Not sure. We'll have to find out.
Bit of true and false. You'll be fine. I have so much to ask you and so much to talk about. Before we came in the studio, we didn't even want to discuss this topic, did we?
Yeah,
but let's save it for now.
Yeah, you said, should we? No, that's not. Let's just wait. Let's just wait until we're live.
So,
hit me with it.
Okay, so for context, for people who haven't listened, again, give us a quick intro to who you are and what you do.
Yes, I'm Stuart Sandeman. I run a company called Breath Pods, and ultimately I help empower people to make transformations in their life through the power of breathing. So working with all walks of life, from Olympic athletes to people going through challenges, and grief as well is a big part of that, helping people manage or integrate trauma and grief and move forward in life with a bit more ease.
My God, was it transformative. So last weekend, it was Saturday. I was really kindly invited to go and take part in this breathwork session. It was a 3-hour session in a really beautiful studio, by the way. That was so lovely.
It is a lovely, lovely space.
It was really nice. And I'd done a breathwork session before, but I was still a bit apprehensive. I didn't quite know what to expect. So I got in there and how many people? 30 people?
Yeah, there's about 40, I think.
40 people. So. It was quite a lot of people. I was a bit nervous actually going in there. And it was, you kind of, actually, do you want to describe what happened and then I'll describe my experience? Because you'll do it better than me.
Yeah, I can explain what I think happened from my side.
Yes, and then we can exactly. Let's do that.
So Saturday, I mean, it was only, what day we're on now? Tuesday, four days ago.
Yeah.
3 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah. 4 days ago. It's one of our deep dive workshops. There's loads of different ways that you can use your breath to have a shift and change, whether that is just using your breath to find calm or using your breath to help you sleep. But one of the most profound applications of breath and breathing or breath work is using it to have a release of some sort of emotion. Because when we go through our life, we hold our breath to stop ourselves from feeling. Unconsciously, we don't often aware we're doing it, so we're holding back from feeling by holding our breath to stop ourselves bursting out with laughter, or holding our breath to stop the anger and rage coming out of our mouth. So our breath becomes this barometer of how we're feeling, but it also, when we're controlling it, we're stopping ourselves from fully feeling. So the workshop on Saturday was designed to create a safe space in these beautiful studios, safe space for people to feel unconditionally. Whatever it is, it was all welcome. Whether that was anger, whether that was grief, whether that was joy that they hadn't allowed themselves to express. You name it. Anything on the emotional spectrum is completely open in those spaces. So from my perspective, what we basically did is a 3-hour workshop. So it's about opening up the physical body and breath. So we did some exercises around that. We did a bit of partner work, which is kind of fun. Maybe not fun when you explain it from your side, but I think it was fun.
No, it was great. It was great. Kind of like icebreaker.
Icebreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just get the idea behind it is getting the body moving, getting out of our heads. When we're going through our life, we're stuck in our heads half the time. And this is really about having this somatic release with our body. So we did some movement. We did some partner work. I then did a demo out the front to just explain what we're going to be doing. But it's,
that was really interesting. I want to dive into that later. Yeah.
Yeah. So that what it fascinates me every time, because we can dive into it. But in a snapshot just now, just to set the scene, you can tell a lot about somebody just by the way they breathe. And by doing a profile of how is this person breathing and what are they holding on to, whatever that is on the emotional spectrum. So did that demo at the beginning, which was great and fascinating. And even having done this for 9 years now, it's still, I'm still amazed and surprised at what the breath tells you without having to speak to the person.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went into the practice, and the practice was about an hour of breathing in a specific format, which is quite dynamic, but it's relaxed and it's quite rhythmic, along with sound and music, to evoke a shift in chemistry in the body, a shift in thought patterns, a shift in brainwaves, and an opening of the breath, opening into these spaces that we've closed down. Now, why we've closed them down is going to be individualized for every single person, depending on what they've gone through in their life. But the tension that they hold in their body, which is usually an emotional tension, and create that space. And then we did a bit of meditation at the end, and then brought everybody back round and did a bit of sharing, and that was it. 3 hours went in a flash.
It did go really quickly. I wasn't actually sure how long we were away. Well, I was in my little world.
Away. Where did you go?
Where did I go? I went somewhere else.
Tell me about it. Where did you go?
Oh, it was... So I was lying down and we started breathing, and I'm quite an agitated person, so I don't like lying down and sitting still. I like to do things. So I was... Because my mind goes places and erases if I'm not doing anything. So I was a little bit distracted because I knew I could hear everyone else breathing around me. And I thought, oh my gosh, what if I don't feel anything? And I was putting all of this pressure on myself to feel something.
Yeah.
And so I think I was getting frustrated at the process. And I could hear other people around me sort of releasing and letting go, which was amazing. But I thought, oh shit, like, is this me? What if it doesn't work for me?
Mm. So that there just in itself is a controller pattern. We're stuck in our thoughts. We're stuck in this mindset of expectation, but also it's not being met, and we get stuck, and our breathing is stuck at the same time. So that controller pattern, am I doing it right? Am I getting this right? Oh, this isn't working for me. Why is it not working? Oh, everyone else has a good time. I feel, oh, why am I even here? Oh, I should just get up and leave. All that stuff can go through your head in those sessions when we're stuck in that pattern. So carry on.
Yeah, no, well, no, I think you're so right. And I think my brain, what was really interesting is that my brain was actually going towards things that I desired, which were bad for me. And it was almost as if, like, that's going to switch off this feeling of boredom or this feeling of really feeling uncomfortable. So I thought that was quite an interesting takeaway, because I thought, why did I feel like I wanted to go and eat pizza, or why did I feel like I wanted to have a cigarette? It was all these things that I do to try and remove myself from feeling something, when I really, what I needed to do there was just, you know, lie there and go through the process and breathe and be guided by yourself and Nova. And I think that in the end, I thought, right, I need to try and switch this off. So I just went with it, was breathing. And then I think it was, I don't know, I can't gauge what time it was, but perhaps it was 20 minutes in. What did we do? We were kind of tapping the floor and moving our legs and screaming.
Yeah, we're using sound. I wouldn't say screaming, but sometimes a scream comes out.
I screamed.
But yeah, it's using sound to... Sound is a high frequency in the body. It helps vibrate the body, and we're shifting our energy.
Mm.
So we're deliberately using sound intermittently along with the breath and movement to release, to create this shift in the body. Again, changing the chemistry, because we're breathing a bit quicker, so carbon dioxide is dropping. And then when we use the sound, carbon dioxide increases again. So we're really playing with the alchemy of our body and breath. And that is a big part of it as well, allowing ourselves to really express. Sometimes people just haven't given themselves the opportunity to just make that sound their whole life. So that part in itself might just come as a little at first, and then throughout the session, by the end, they're allowing themselves and giving themselves permission to express.
But it's almost as if you don't want to take space, do you, when you're making those sounds and being, I don't know, you maybe as a child you were called annoying and in the way, and it was just not okay to make those kind of sounds and be loud, because you're just like in the way. But I think that was the trigger point for me, is when we started doing a few of those rounds of body movement, and for me screaming, it was just this release just hit me, and it was immense pain deep in my chest. It was the same level of pain that I felt when Dad died in that hospital room. it took me back to that place, and it was it made me feel sick. It made me feel like I was in this kind of black hole, and when I closed my eyes, I could almost picture my lungs or something. It was like this tube in my body with this sort of like tennis ball stuck, and it just needed to come out and it couldn't come out. So it felt like something was in there that needed to come out, and part of it moved when I was screaming and when I was crying, and I was sobbing, and I think something shifted in me, and it did feel like a release. And then I went back into, and you and Nova were so, I mean, thank you so much for being so supportive, because I actually don't know what I would have done, but you were really there to kind of support me and guide me through that pain, and that was, I'm so grateful for that, because I felt like I felt comforted when I felt so vulnerable. And that was really, really...
With your pain, was it when you say you're linking the pain back to the time when you were in the hospital?
Yeah.
With your dad. So were you calling that emotional pain, or do you feel like it was physical pain, or a mixture of both?
It was a mixture of both, yeah. Definitely. It was so physical. It was really physical. But then it shifted. So that first kind of wave of emotion happened, and then I went back into breathing like we were during the session, and then suddenly we'd do another few rounds of these body movements and screaming, and I was so angry. I felt really, really fucking angry at life. I was like, oh my God, I just need to get through this anger. And then I think as soon as I'd experienced the anger and could scream and let go, I could then access the pain and access those feelings that have been dug so deep.
Yeah.
And then I had this moment of a really lovely moment, actually, of feeling really close to my dad. And he wasn't actually in the hospital. He was with me in our family home, running around in the garden with my brother and my mum. And it was really beautiful. And I suddenly felt really connected to him. And I could hear him saying to me, I am so proud of you, of you're doing so well. And it felt as if he was just above me. It felt like he was there. It was really bizarre. I was like, I felt so disconnected from him for so long. It's been, oh, Mark, Dad, this. He's been around in conversation, but not necessarily emotionally or spiritually near me. Mm. And I think that was the first time where I suddenly felt, oh, I haven't forgotten him. He is still here, and he is still a big, big part of my life. And I still am emotional about what's happened. But although it's so painful, I can still be close to him in quite a beautiful way. And so that happened a few times. And then eventually, I think when we came into the kind of meditation stage, I felt really exhausted, yeah, but peaceful. And I woke up thinking, what the fuck has just happened? It was just crazy. Crazy. And all I did was breathe.
Yeah. And it's...
Are you sure you didn't spike the water?
Yeah, well, I didn't this time. No, it's such a... Thank you for sharing and being so open and sharing just now. And like I said beforehand, I'm always amazed, but I'm not at the same time, that the depth of where a session takes somebody. And I can see what's happening in the group from a emotional perspective. I can see people moving through stuff. I can see what the breath is doing, but I don't know exactly what's happening in their experience. But what you shared is so common for people going through grief. Having an experience of a connection to a loved one. And it was my experience, my first ever breathwork session after my girlfriend passing away. I felt like Tiff was there holding my hand saying, this is what we're looking for. Mm. And I had the same, exact same as you. I thought, what is this? What just happened? What is this? And I've been on that journey of, was she there holding my hand or not? Mm. Was your dad there with you in the room? That's something I can't answer.
Yeah.
But the number of experiences of anecdotal experiences of people finishing a session and then have shared that, oh my God, my granddad came to me, my dad came to me, my brother, my sister, whoever has passed away and gone to the other side, there seems to be something very powerful and special about this form of breathing that can allow us not only to feel what we need to feel, that ball inside of you that physically felt painful and sore in the lungs as well. Chinese medicine say grief is held in the lungs. Yeah. So we're accessing that, allowing that energy to have movement, which is emotion, energy in motion. But usually we've just trapped it and we've not allowed it to flow. For something like grief, it's just so powerful because we have this shift of energy in motion, the emotion, the physical change, even if that's painful and physically sore through the practice, we also have this emotionally painful experience. But then it's like we go through this different wave of the physical, then we move through that physical, then we're in this emotional wave, and then it's like, then we're in this space of nothing and something and everything where we feel deeply connected. It's like the veil between the physical world and the non-physical, the spiritual world, has become very thin all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And we can access and we can have insight. And whether that is speaking to a loved one that's no longer here, or whether that is deep connection to a guide or a spiritual space. And it's something I'm fascinated by, because is it imagination?
Mm.
I mean, in my view, no, because it's too common a occurrence for people just to make it up. But it's really hard to quantify when we've been looking at it and saying, well, anecdotally we can see this happens and is regular, and I love that you had that experience, and coming on this show about grief, that you had this powerful grieving experience, but a deep connection that ultimately was the reason that I now do what I do. Because in the breath sessions, I felt so close to my partner that passed away, Tiff. I felt so close to her in the breath sessions that I just wanted to do more of it. I'm like, well, you know, I could just go and just do this breathing thing, and then I feel very connected to her in a different way, almost more connected to her than in the physical world.
Wow.
Because I felt so like she was, like you said, just there. Like,
were your conversations based off of conversations you'd previously had, do you think, or what was going on in your mind? Because for me, Dad was at the top right-hand side of my brain. I don't know, he felt like he was up here.
Yeah.
And then he was saying he was proud of me, but that stemmed from a conversation I had with him when he was diagnosed and was told me, I'm terminally ill, I'm really scared, I'm so sorry. And I remember him hugging me really tight, and I just remember that moment, and I just wonder, is that what I'm remembering and I'm just positioning it in a different way, or maybe is it a dream, or maybe he is there?
Well, there's lots of things we can look at on what is happening in those sessions, and it's something I've been doing research on and trying to understand, and there's different things that can happen because we are dropping, we're stressing the body out. And I know that sounds like a silly thing to, why would you want to stress our body out? But I mean, going to the gym is stressful, but we're moving our body into this place where it actually has a shift in the mind. There's some that believe that we start to release DMT, I've forgotten the full name of it, but DMT, in those sessions that creates this otherworldly experience. And it's the same, like DMT is released when we dream. So we have this dreamlike experience. And that's very common in grief as well, where we are going through grieving. You maybe have that partner or somebody come to you in that dreamlike state. So in this these experiences, it's very common for these things to happen. But it's quite hard to quantify without rigging up a whole load of people, because it doesn't always happen with everybody. And that's why I thought it was amazing knowing we were coming on this show that you had that experience, because sometimes people come looking for that experience and it doesn't happen. And it's almost like what you shared at the beginning, it's the expectation. Oh, I've heard it on a radio show that I can do this thing, and that will be the ticket that I'm looking for to experience my grief. Yes, it might happen, but then sometimes we load too much expectation, so we're stuck in our mind through that whole practice. We don't leave our mind enter our body, that we don't have the experience we were hoping for. So there's different, really different schools of thought around what is actually happening in the body. Is it just because of the shift and change? Is it because we're shifting and playing around with the chemistry of our body that's tricking our brain and mind that it starts to hallucinate and trip out and we evoke this imagination? Or are we actually accessing something that is absolutely profound, which is a connection to a world that isn't physical, a non-physical experience? And there's teachers and schools that look at this holotropic breathwork was a big one. Stan Grof, who was a pioneer of that, who used to administer LSD, therapeutic LSD, to help people move through traumatic experiences.
I read that, yeah.
And yeah, when that was illegal in the States, became illegal in the States, his, at John Hopkins, he could no longer practice, but he started working with breath and breathing to evoke the similar experience for patients, for people going through these challenges like grief. So it happens over and over again, and it's a really beautiful thing because it allows us to have a bit of closure and allows us to obviously move the physical tension in our body and allow the emotional integration to happen, to have this full completion. But then it also gives us this space where we can have this beautiful connection experience that, when I first had it, it spun me out because I was having these experiences of connection and having this insight and then answers flooding through, but not from my voice, from a voice elsewhere or Tiff's voice. And then I started to think, like, well, what is life? Like, what is this, some cruel game? Like, what the fuck's going on here? Is this, yeah, so it's
it raises a lot of other questions. But yeah, I think the other thing it does is it just forces you to just stop and slow down,
yeah,
and just give yourself the time to feel those things that are so deeply buried. And I think so many of us have so much trauma just in our bodies that we just need to let go. And there's just only so much counselling and chatting you can do, you know. And I think actually what it was is, I know I said there was a kind of tennis ball stuck in here, it was as if I was choking. I felt like I was choking on something, and it was in my kind of, what's it called, your solar plexus thing.
Yeah.
It was in there, that's where it was.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and I just...
Which is really interesting because I said at the beginning,
yeah,
the controller pattern, where somebody is trying to be in control the whole time.
Uh-huh, me.
Yeah. Well, what do you lack? Trust. And what is the solar plexus? The point of the solar plexus is trust. So if we are fully trusting, we're no longer in control because we're trusting. We're saying it's not up to me. I don't need to have the control anymore. So it's really interesting there, just talking about that, how that is manifested as this physical tension in the solar plexus, which is the trust button. So once that trust button is released, that tension goes, we're fully letting go, we're allowing ourselves to let go of control. And in those moments of letting go of control, we kind of let our guard down so we can access the feeling that we've been, our body and mind is trying to protect us from feeling this all this time.
And do you think the more breathwork sessions you do, or the more that you allow yourself, the more you trust yourself, that, I'm just trying to picture it like a battery, that it will just slowly kind of, the percentage will get lower and lower and lower in terms of how we deal with day-to-day issues, and the fact that it just doesn't have to kind of feel so overwhelming and full, and it's almost like letting that balloon pop.
Yeah.
Or like letting the air out.
Absolutely. The way I view it is, well, if we've got tension in our body because of an experience we're not allowing ourselves to feel, then our breathing changes. So we're stuck in a heightened state of anxiety anyway, because our breathing isn't open and flowing. And if our breathing is open and flowing and relaxed, it's telling a signal to our brain that we're safe. But if we've got tension in our breathing cycle, where there's solar plexus, then our breathing becomes short and shallow and restricted. Yeah. So we're sending an alarm bell to our brain about our environment when there's no alarm to go off. So what happens is, almost, you said it like a battery, it's almost like the bin is already full, and then the small things in our day, the bin overflows. That bin is full of stress and it's just overflowing. Whereas practices like what you experienced on Saturday allows us to just empty the bin, and then things might go in the bin again, but we're not overflowing and we're able to handle it, manage it much better throughout our day. So we're able to be a bit more resilient to our stressors, or not get so triggered by certain situations or people or anything at all. We're able to manage a lot more.
So in terms of dealing with processing my grief, I came to your session with, I don't know, 80% full of grief and shit that I need to kind of work through. And then maybe after the session, where are we at? 60%? What do we do after that? Like, what do I do? Because this is what Tasha and I have been trying to work out. There's obviously no rule book to grieving and processing things, but there must be a trajectory that can benefit my process.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was a deep dive session, a longer set, longer form session. You might need a couple of those. You may need to work with the facilitator or just come back into your practice to keep your energy open and flow. I often liken it a little bit like, you know, if you go and see a chiropractor and they crack your back,
yeah,
and it's all in alignment, but then you go and reach for something and you probably go back to normal. So you, yeah, do a few different sessions.
And they sign you up for about 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing with our breathing, when we're born, our breathing is naturally open and flow. And then because of our life experiences, we start to create tension and restrictions in the breathing. So our body does want to go back to homeostasis. It wants to go back to balance, but it's just holding on because it thinks, in this moment, I'm holding on because that's the safe thing to do. So in the body knows no time. It's just holding on right now in the present. It's only our mind that has this idea of time. So if it's holding on because it thinks that's the safe thing to do, you need to give it a safe environment, move through that stuff. Now your mind, so you've had that session, you've had this big experience, you've gone from 80% grief to 60% grief, which is massive, 20% less, which is great. Then it's about just working, continue working with your breath to move through these things. Your mind might make up more stories and create more tension. So it's about managing that as well. It's not to say that grief goes. It's just the emotional charge that's correlated to the grief that diminishes. So that was the thing that I realized with my own grief was, once I'd processed it, I could still go into thought and it'd be sad and upset, but I didn't have this, like you said, the tennis ball. I didn't have the physical tension anymore. And what was, I felt like when my dad passed away 2 years ago, I felt like I grieved really well. And it's still sad. And there's times that it even happened the other week. Something happened and I want to tell him. I think, oh, I'm going to call my dad. And then I realized, he's not here to call. And it's like this little micro grief that happens again.
Yeah.
When you go, I really wanted to tell him about it. But then I usually just tell him and I sit with that. Or I go and do a breath session.
I was going to say, do you ever do a breath session to kind of feel closer to him?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And ask for guidance. And I set that intention beforehand. But I felt like the first time through TIFF, it was hard and messy and challenging. It was still hard and sad when my dad died, but it was I went into deep breathwork process myself by myself and just bawled it out, like went there, really really felt what I needed to feel in this place, in this safe space, just let it flow. And then it was like the weight of grief had gone. The story's still there and it's still sad and I can still feel upset, but I just didn't have this heaviness anymore. It wasn't debilitating.
Yeah, I think that's, I don't want to misquote Nova, but I think she said something like, you know, the more you do this, the less pain will be attached to those memories. Those memories will eventually just be memories, beautiful memories that you can think about. But at the moment, these memories are just so heavy and they are so charged with anger. And they're actually charged with a lot of different emotions. And they're all kind of like, you know, these sort of like elastic bands and you put them all around to make a little ball. That's how it feels. Like those memories are just, I just almost need to kind of like peel back those elastic bands, ping them off to then eventually just be left with one elastic band, which is just the memory. I don't know, I'm not very good at analogies. But yeah, no, there's so much I want to talk to you about, but we're going to have to go to a break because we are going to speak to Katie Rose Whiting, who is the death and marriage, miscarriage doula. But hopefully we can pick up on this conversation after.
Yeah, can't wait.
So stick around and see you after the break.
FUPAR Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Mr. Later Williams, hello. Mate, can we just address that you did Strictly Come Dancing?
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair, but listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly, won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got 2 hours, I was like, whoa, like there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
It got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed, all the OGs had gone, and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23 and was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
And I know conversion therapy doesn't work because one of the most popular conversion therapy camps in America, I watched a documentary, it is a 2 week long program. They all share a room for the week. Now, look, I don't want to insinuate too much, but my one hope is that if they do get caught, they adopt a parenting tactic of making them smoke the whole packet. Oh, you like sucking cock, do you? Well, you're not leaving this room until all of these cocks have been sucked.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, welcome back to Death, a Funny Business with myself, Becky Briggs, and...
Cheers, Sandman.
We are joined online with Katie Rose Whiting, a death and miscarriage doula. Hello, can you hear us?
I can hear you, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Sorry. Slightly coldy, so excuse my... rough throat, but otherwise I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you guys?
I feel like everyone's got cold at the moment. I think it's
definitely going around, but this nice weather will hopefully help.
It will. And thanks so much for joining us. I know I'm normally here with Natasha, but Stuart's here today. I don't know if you know anything about Stuart, but Stuart is a breathwork coach and also has gone through a lot of grief in his life. So we're kind of just chatting about grief today, as we always do. But thanks for joining us. Do you want to kind of just we'll dive straight in, and I want to know, what is a doula and how did you get into this line of work?
Sure. So very much like a birth doula. So I think people already know a lot about birth doulas.
For somebody that doesn't know anything about a doula, can you explain?
It's strange, but the original translation is actually really un-PC. It's female slave, I think, in Greek. But what it means is really companion. And when we were, you know, in tribes and community, living more closely together, we would always have a wise woman. It would usually be a woman who would be looking after births in the community and deaths. It would be a caretaking role, but very much a kind of a human guide, so a companion to walk alongside you in that transition. So with birth, it's obviously a process of looking after that woman, building a connection with her while she's going through pregnancy, very much honouring what she needs. It could be emotional needs, it could be physical needs, it could be spiritual needs, and being a consistent person within her journey. And then obviously being there for the physical birth and looking after her afterwards. So it's really similar with a death doula. It's basically walking alongside someone through the dying process, looking after their emotional, physical, spiritual needs. It's very much non-medical, so we don't come from a medical background. Some of us are trained doctors, some of us come from, you know, we've been occupational therapists or nurses, but it's very much working with a person as a human, connected on a level that isn't about, you know, what pain relief do you need right now? What medication do you need? How can I fix this? It's about being with what we can't fix. And I'm still here. I'm going to be consistent for you. And I'm trying to give that person the support they need, whatever that looks like. So it can be, we really match the doula with the client. So it can be, it's almost like dating, but for doulas and the person, the client.
So there's like a beginning, middle, a kind of before event, the event, and then aftercare. If we're looking at death or pregnant or birth, so that process before getting you ready for that experience, then supporting the moment that happens, and then afterwards being a level of care and support again. Is that correct? Yeah,
absolutely. So you sometimes you might be working with a client. So if somebody's been diagnosed with a terminal illness, it could be that you build that relationship over years, and it could be that you're doing advanced planning with them. You're helping them to come to terms with their diagnosis. You're helping them to tie up loose ends, to plan their funeral. And it can also look like helping them to connect with themselves on a deeper level, to help them to come home to themselves before they actually do die. And then it can look like supporting the family before and afterwards. It can be very quick. So a lot of us work within kind of hospices or NHS, where you're literally working with people for maybe days. And obviously that can be a very quick relationship that you have, but it can also provide a lot of comfort if you've got someone there that's, you know, not there to do something medical to you. It's just there for you. I should say that I'm also a miscarriage and pregnancy loss doula, so sometimes that looks like working with people who have just experienced a loss and they're coming to terms with it, and they want to go through the preconception journey and get themselves ready for another pregnancy, and perhaps supporting them through that new pregnancy, because pregnancy after loss is very different to just a new pregnancy that you haven't experienced loss before. And it can look like, you know, people contacting you when they know that they are about to miscarry and helping them through those options. So it's really individual. It's basically, you know, as individual as all of our life, death can look like. So no client is ever the same, and no story or journey is ever the same.
And how do you build those relationships with people? I mean, they're obviously really vulnerable and going through a really turbulent time. How do you connect with them to be there and emotionally provide and just kind of support them? So I can imagine a lot of people would be, I don't know, angry and maybe a bit standoffish. And I mean, I didn't even know that you could have a doula. So when my dad died, it was all very rapid, and I think we had like Macmillan nurses who perhaps did a similar role. But how does your role play in that?
I think relationship building is all about communication and kind of having that connection with someone. So obviously sometimes it doesn't always work, and it's okay to say that. And each doula works differently, so each doula has a different personality and different tools to bring to the table. So some doulas are very much like, I'm not going to say woo woo, but more spiritual, and they will be coming from a more spiritual lens. Some are very practical and have tools like the visualization or the meditation or the breath work, for example, to help connect with people and ground people. And some are very practical, and it's all about, you know, advanced planning and paperwork. So I think what we do is tend to have a, you know, conversation with the family or with the client, with the person that you're working with, and see what they actually really need and what they feel that they want, and meet them where they are. I think just coming with a very open heart and being, we're kind of trained to be with uncomfortable emotions. So obviously there's so many emotions in the mix with anticipatory grief, when you're going through stress, when you're losing someone, when you're ill yourself, and actually just sitting with all of that, and being a consistent, calm presence and not reacting, responding from your own, you know, you don't bring your own stuff as much as you can.
I think it's such an important role that I didn't know existed either. I'd heard of birth doulas and death doulas, but actually a doula for miscarriage. My fiance had an ectopic pregnancy, form of miscarriage, where the fertilised egg gets stuck in the fallopian tube, and it was quite traumatic because the tube burst and she was in having an operation. So it was like this double grief, because it's the grief of the miscarriage, but then also having losing a fallopian tube, which is the grief of, well, what next? Is this going to affect my chance of having children, etc.? And I think it's such, it was such a challenging time for both of us to go through that. I never even put it in the grief bucket until now we're talking about it, because it was a really hard time, and there isn't that much. I didn't realise so many people miscarry until this happened, because people don't really talk about it, and they don't really. I didn't even know what an ectopic pregnancy was until this happened, and then I realised like it happens all the time. And the minute I started talking about it, people were like, "Oh, yeah, that happened to so and so. That happened to this person. That happened." And I thought, "Wow, people don't have this conversation." But equally, I didn't see the level of support out there. And Nova is incredible, and she's a really strong woman. We did lots of breath work. We did the tools that we have, but having a framework or somebody there that has worked through people through this transition before, I think is so important. Is there a framework that you run by then? I know you said it's different for everybody. Is there a certain toolkit that you provide, or any advice you would give somebody maybe listening that has gone through a miscarriage or gone through an ectopic pregnancy or something like that?
Thank you for sharing that. And yes, miscarriage is so common. It's one in four women miscarry. And I think it's really interesting because, like with an ectopic pregnancy, it can be really early on, and it sometimes doesn't feel like you have, like you say, permission to grieve, because it's an early pregnancy and so many people don't even tell anybody that they're pregnant until kind of 3 months, the 12-week mark. And we can still miscarry after the 12 weeks, but it's kind of, the stats are that it's a lot less. And I think it's still such a huge loss. It's, you're grieving the untold story of your child that you're kind of already imagining this life with, and it's such a really unique type of loss, and it's really hard to explain to anybody who hasn't had a miscarriage or pregnancy loss. You're literally a vessel for life and for death, and it changes you literally on a cellular level, where your baby that you were carrying, you will always carry their DNA. You are literally changed because of that baby. But it's like a rite of passage, a huge, huge transition. And kind of, for me, it was like, and I've had two miscarriages. It was like, these babies are giving you the opportunity to learn more about yourself, and it was very specific, like lessons, like going to the depths of myself to kind of become a mother. So I think when I start working with somebody, I try to meet them where they're at, and sometimes they're very much still going through the physical symptoms, because a miscarriage can be really, really tough on the body. So there may be medical intervention, there may be it may be that you've had a lot of blood loss, and people don't talk about that. So often when you go to a doctor, or you'll get going to the early pregnancy unit, and you're told you're about to miscarry, or you might already know you're miscarrying because you've started to bleed, a lot of the time you're told it's like a heavy period, and it really isn't. And I know that you're into like being real and raw on this show. So it often doesn't look like that. And it's very much, there's, you won't have seen that amount of blood before, and it can be really, really scary. And I think one of the difficult things about miscarriage is no one talks about that. It's like with women, you know, we don't talk about periods. We see, you know, adverts with the kind of blue liquid, not blood. And we're kind of, it's like a shameful thing. And it's like your body's doing something wrong. But actually, maybe it's doing something right. And maybe this pregnancy wasn't viable. Or maybe, you know, there's a reason this is happening. So I try to really meet the individual woman exactly where she is, whether it's that she's actually really going through the physical side of things, and then she's postpartum, so she will have given birth, even if it's not a living baby and it's not a full-term pregnancy. You're still very much depleted, your hormones are up and down, and you really need to you know, be nourishing yourself, staying at home, processing, and your body is literally doing so much. Like in early pregnancy and miscarriage, your body is doing so much. So often the sessions look like seeing where that woman is, physically, emotionally, checking with her. There could be grief there. There's difficult emotions in the shadow, shame, guilt, all of those things. They often blame themselves or think it's something that they've done wrong, and that's a process to come through. And then it's very much about, I usually do a nourishment plan. So looking at building blood again, looking at, you know, hormone levels, how to get those back in balance, and really just bringing that individual back into balance so that she can think about if she wants to go on to try again. Really honouring that loss before that happens. So not just kind of bypassing it, but actually just sitting with, how is this making me feel in my body, in my heart, in my womb space? Because I think if we just try and, you know, pretend like everything's okay and just try again and go back to work, we can often have multiple losses, or we can really deplete ourselves. And actually for the next pregnancy, we should be sort of building ourselves back up and not pretending that this didn't happen. So yeah, it's really individual again, but meeting that individual where they're at, seeing what they need, and supporting them as best that I can to come back into balance after such a big event.
Katie, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm really sorry that you've had to go through that, but it's really inspiring what you do, and it's really insightful. Actually, you didn't really know much about miscarriages and the emotional and physical kind of impact that it has on a woman's body. And I think you're so right. These are conversations that need to be had, and it's actually ludicrous that we have, like, on adverts, like, blue period. Like, I mean, what are we doing? And this is the human body, and we should be talking about life and death all the time. So thank you so much for sharing your story and for explaining what it is that you do. Have you got any last questions, Stuart?
No, it was nice how you shared the how the soul or baby comes in to teach a lesson, even if it's a miscarriage. Mm. And I think that was a big realization for Nova when she was going through this process, and it sparked a whole healing journey. She knows herself better than ever because of what had happened now. So I think having the experience, but also having somebody that can take you through that to help you overcome it and come back stronger,
and tell you it's okay and to grieve. You have permission.
And like you said, the stats on miscarriage are so high, and people think, oh, it's a miscarriage, but actually your body knows what it's doing. So it's maybe miscarriaging for a reason, because it's not chromosomally correct, or something's up. And if that did go full course, then there would be an issue with that child. So it's actually trusting that your body, coming back to that trust where we were talking about before, trusting that was meant to happen this time. But then having the level of support, whether that's emotional support. So it sounds incredible work that you do, Katie. And more
so
people
much.
Should know. How do people find out about a doula? Or how do people contact or reach out to someone like yourself?
So in the UK, we have a community of doulas, end-of-life doulas, and we've all been trained, and it's the organisation is called End of Life Doula UK, so you can Googleize that and it will come up, and there you can see the doulas in your area, and you can contact them and get referrals and be matched with a doula in your area. Lots of doulas work remotely as well, depending on the case. The miscarriage doula thing isn't so big in the UK. So I did my training in America, but it's really interesting because there's so much going on in Parliament at the moment where they're actually kind of recognising now that, you know, miscarriage pre 24 weeks, there probably should be leave. There's now you can get a certificate to say that you've had that loss. Mm. Which is really validating and actually super important because it gives women permission to actually rest and have that the time they need. So I think there are some of us, but there's no kind of main community or main place to find us. So yeah, it's a case of word of mouth, and you can find me on my website.
I think what we'll do is we'll link your website details and stuff on our socials as well. I'm really sorry, we're going to have to go to a break, but thank you so much for telling us everything, Katie, and we'll be sure to kind of share your stuff as well. Thank you. See you guys after the break.
Thank you.
Politics Uncensored.
They can't turn off your water because water is a human right. It's not like internet, which we can talk about.
Are you saying we should all stop paying?
I'm not saying we should all stop paying. I think no one should have to pay.
Their argument would be prices are going up. We need all this money because we have to invest in our ageing Victoria infrastructure, which there's been no new infrastructure built in sewage, whatever, since the Victorian era. How would you respond to that?
They're talking out of their backside. It's bullshit of the highest order.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
1 in 5 people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Mr. Later Williams, hello. Mate, can we just address that you did Strictly Come Dancing?
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair. But listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly. It won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got 2 hours, I was like, whoa, like there's so many different styles. I was like, oh. And Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
Death, a Funny Business on FUBAR Radio. with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. We have overrun, nearly. We have 20 seconds left to end the show. I'm going to say thank you so much, Stuart, for being here co-hosting with me. I am not going to be here next week, but Natasha will be back. So she'll be full of energy and excited to see you all again. There is so much that I want to know about breathwork, and I haven't managed to ask you everything, but where can we find your stuff?
Breathpod.com.
Perfect.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, and I want to know body mapping. That's what I want to... You need to come back, because we're going to talk about body mapping.
And we didn't do our game.
Damn. Anyway, thanks for a lovely time this week. See you next week. Bye.